check out our new NBA show, Beyond the Arc, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can find me, John Gonzalez, NBA insider Bill Reiter, and Ashley Nicole Moss 5 days a week talking all things NBA. Whether you're looking for insightful discussions, upbeat commentary, breaking news, interviews, or coverage of all the biggest stories in the NBA, our new show is the place to be 5 days a week. Download and follow Beyond the Arc on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
New CBS Monday.
NCIS. Here's where we can see them.
NCIS and NCIS Hawaii return with all new cases.
Double tap to the chest, one to the head.
These guys are professionals.
All new criminals.
Violent island that got here.
Welcome to paradise.
And all new crimes to be solved.
If you're watching this, I've been arrested.
What are the charges?
Just one. Murder.
New NCIS and NCIS Hawaii. Monday, starting at 9, 8 central on CBS and streaming on Paramount Plus.
Freaking first cut. Golly.
What's going on, First Cut fam? I'm your host for your round three recap of the Players' Championship. Rick is not here. He is at a wedding in Los Angeles, but we have two guys married to the game ourselves. I'm Patrick McDonald, joined by the marksman himself, Mark Immelman. Mark, how are we doing?
Marksman, that's very kind of you, Patrick. I appreciate it. No, good. I'm tired. I'll be honest with you. It's been a few long days on PGA Tour Live, but I am alongside Jonathan Coachman, and he's like human Red Bull. The guy's energy level is off the charts, so he's keeping me going. But it's been a lot of fun so far, man. Thank you.
Yeah, Coach is a character for sure, and it was a long day out there at TPC Sawgrass. Play began at 7 a.m. The resumption of round two, and it ended with Adam Svensson with the lead at the end of it. Scotty Scheffler there as well. You said you followed Scotty and Rory there to pick up kind of round two. How do you look out there to begin his Saturday?
You know what? We had had Scotty the first couple rounds because you had that megawatt grouping, the top three guys in the world. It was Rahm and Scotty and Rory, obviously. And to me, Scotty just looked like he was playing in a major championship. Now, I know that sounds a little trite because this is it's not a major championship, but it's a major event. And you win big events like this by being cerebral and hitting the right shot. Not necessarily a good shot, but just the right shot. And the first couple of rounds were difficult with firm greens and blustery conditions, and that southeasterly just makes the course play hard. And he just seemed like he hit the thing down the middle of the green every single time. And he looked like he's hitting the driver solid. And the 68 he shot in round one was kind of the highest he could have shot. And then in round two, the way he came out, he just sort of plodded around the place, you know, and then all of a sudden there late Friday afternoon when the wind starts dying down, he makes a bomb from like 25 feet for birdie on 10, hits it on the green 11 in two, and then comes back this morning and he two putts for birdie. And then he just starts building on that. But again, nothing crazy. It wasn't like over aggressive or anything. And he just was picking birdies off when they came to him, and he had an air of just a peace, like a serenity about him that looked out of the ordinary. I mean, everyone else, you can almost see the panic on their faces because this place is going to wear your nerves thin because of the sensory overload from water and bulkheads and crosswinds and all the sort of stuff that the stadium course shows. But Scotty's looking chilled, man. It's like he's playing with these buds at home, and he and Ted Scott are a dynamite combination, and he's just cruising along, picking birdies off. And the next thing, he gets himself in the final group. And then I hate to say it was one-way traffic because I have high respect for Adam Svensson. But it kind of looked like it became one-way traffic in the end, because Scotty is just, putting one foot in front of the other, not beating himself. He's allowing the other people, almost a la Jack Nicklaus and Tiger in a way, to just, you hang around and you let the other people knock themselves out. And we started to see that late this afternoon.
Yeah, the other big name on the leaderboard kind of heading into the third round was Colin Morikawa. We had a big group there at 6-under with Bez, Minwoo Lee, the former loan officer himself, the loan shark, Ben Griffin. But it was really Morikawa who, you know, if you had to pick one name going into the weekend who would make a charge, you would kind of guess him. His approach numbers in the second round were still great. He gained over three strokes, was fine off the tee, but really struggled on and around the green, which was pretty different from his first round when he shot 7-under. And then he kind of fizzled out there in the third round as well. I'm not sure if you saw much of his round at all or were able to witness it, but it's kind of shocking that he was the one big name in this leaderboard to kind of go in the wrong direction.
You know, Patrick, I saw enough, and I'm surprised you said that, because if you had asked me who was the name I was going to pick, I would have said Christian Besaidenhout, and that's not because I'm being a South African homer here. and I will admit, all right, that I was a complete numbskull, because remember when we had the pregame show and I was like, hey, here's the bets to look forward to. And Bez was like plus 225 for a top 40. And I listed his name and I listed Ben Ahn, and they're both well inside the top 20 right now. So I would have thought Besaidenhout, because of the way he's hitting it, and he's hooked up with a new instructor and there's confidence, and he's just a great putter. To me, Colin Morikawa, who I rate highly. Look, you don't fall into major championship wins. He just doesn't look convinced right now. I know he seems to be making some traction on the greens, and everyone's like, well, statistically, he's fine. But when you watch him hit the ball, it's not the same as the guy that was hitting the ball when he was winning, you know, PGA championships and World Golf Championships and stuff like that, Open Championships. So the verdict for me is out on Morikawa right now. And today, it just looked like stuff kind of caught up with him, if that makes sense. Because the one thing about this golf course, I say it all the time, every setup show we do for PGA Tour Live, and I've called this event for like 9 years now, I'm like, this golf course doesn't respect resumes. The best player doesn't always win here. The player who plays the best wins. And right now, I don't think Colin Morikawa is playing the best. But look, his resume and his statistics say, well, yeah, he's one of the best. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, absolutely. And before we get into the third round, I wanted to ask you, since you're out there and you've been out there for a few days now, kind of the impact of the overnight rains and the wind direction change. It led to one of the easiest scoring days in Players Championship history. And it was a stark, stark difference from the first 2 days, where it was firm and fast, balls were rolling out. You saw it early there on kind of the par 5 16th. Guys were eating that hole up really early in the round. Can you kind of just touch on how different it played and how much easier it really was out there?
It was like night and day. And the beauty about this place, because it's a coastal golf course, I mean, we're about 1.5 miles from the Atlantic Ocean. You know, when you get seaside and maritime places, wind weather is likely to change. And we have four different winds forecast for this golf course. And the way Pete Dye set it up, there is less than a handful of holes that travel in the same direction. So every hole you're on, the wind's out of a different angle. And so that's why part of the reason you've got to be very smart about how you strike the ball and what targets you pick. But anyway, to the change, I was perhaps a bit naughty, and I wished Rick or Kyle or someone was going to be on the show tonight, because I made the point one time this morning where I said to Coachman was like, in every other sport, you play kind of the same field or the same court. You know dimensions, you kind of know the players, and you can tackle each other or steal the ball or whatever. In golf, you play in a variable environment all the time, and it's always going in different directions, so you can't really predict. And predicting how this place was going to play was almost impossible. But then when you got some rain, not out of the blue, it was supposed to rain in the evening, it changed this golf course in the blink of an eye. And it went from like an ice skating rink to a place that was like throwing darts for these guys. And early this morning, there was very little wind. And then the wind that was forecast was supposed to be like 10 to 15 out of the north. It kind of died a little bit. And with soft conditions, ball traveling far, it just became a birdie bonanza. And what was expected was sort of blown out the water. So everyone who's expecting, so it was difficult to adjust. But as soon as you give guys of this quality a soft golf course, you know, they play like a point A to point B game. And they can do that, but it's what happens after B that makes it hard for them. So if you're hitting to point B and then it's rolling to C, D, E, and F, you know, that's out of their room of control. And so guys were just having their way with this golf course.
Yeah, let's talk about some of those guys. So the first guy to really make a run on Saturday was Cameron Young. He was 6 under through 9, got up to all the way tied for 6 on the leaderboard. He had one shot on the par 4 12th where, I mean, that tee shot landed about as soft as a sand wedge. It was really unbelievable. Unable to convert that eagle putt, but went out in 30, gained about 2 strokes off the tee, 2 strokes on approach during that 9-hole stretch. Got to 7 under with another birdie there on number 2, his 11th of the day, and then kind of fizzled out. And you said behind the scenes that you were with that group with Spieth and Max Homa as well. Kind of what did you see from those three guys?
It was a fun group. I mean, we were sort of looking forward to hopefully getting that. And when we got it, it's one of those that it feels like a major event when they play together. And Max Homer hadn't had his best stuff. And he found it some with a ball striking today, and he found the range on the green. So he looked more like the Max Homer we know and love. You know, Jordan was typically Jordan. You know, it was like a roller coaster where there's ups and downs and in and outs and excitement and disgust. And but he was very calculated in what he did today, and was sort of getting dusted by Cameron Young a little bit early. They played the back nine first, but then really accelerated it over the back and put together a fantastic day. And I think a whole lot to build on, you know, following on from Bay Hill last week.
Oh, Mark. Yeah, I think Mark just didn't really want to watch or look at Jordan Spieth's polo from today. Absolute abomination. Under Armour continues to sell short. I don't think we're sponsored by them, Josh, so I think we're good. But Jordan Spieth ended up with that bogey-free 6-under-66, was third in strokes gained tee to green behind only Tom Hoagie and Scottie Scheffler, who we will most definitely touch on later. But in the group behind him was Sung J.M., who was 5-under through his first seven holes, was really making a run and kind of sustained it, unlike Cameron Young. Sungjae, second in strokes gained total for the day, turned in 5-under 31, added three more birdies before, actually a really good bogey there on number eight. Little like snappy hook hybrid off the tee on that long par three, hit it into a palmetto, got up and down for bogey, added a birdie on number nine to shoot 64 and kind of get himself into this tournament. And he actually talked with the media afterwards, and he said that his neck was bothering him the first 2 days. He was 4-over early in this tournament, has played kind of the second half in 12-under his last, I want to say, 26 holes he's been 12-under. So it's loosened up a bit more as of late, and it's really shown in his play. I'm not sure if he's going to have enough to catch Scottie Scheffler, given he's a half dozen behind. But it's good to see Sungjae back. Off the tee, play was all right, and it was a bit more putter than he probably would like to admit today in his third round. But he's right there at 8-under. Denny McCarthy was another player to make a run, who was 5-under through 7. Unfortunately, Denny kind of fizzled out with a double bogey there on number 11, the easiest hole on the golf course. And look, I know Denny pretty well. He beat me one up in high school. Not a big deal. I know he can putt the lights out of the ball. And I thought it was interesting that they said on the broadcast that he's putting corks in his shoe. I didn't know you're allowed to do that. You can, like, you can't even cork a bat in baseball, but you can put corks in your shoe in golf. If there's only one cork out there, it was probably in Minwoo Lee's 2-iron today, if I had to say that. That thing was an absolute rocket ship. Another player to kind of surprise another shorter hitter was David Lingmerth. He actually contended here in his debut. I believe that was in 2013. That was with all the drama with Tiger Woods and Sergio Garcia. Garcia dunked a couple on 17, I believe, in the final round. And Lingmerth, who was the 54-hole leader that year, ended up finishing runner-up to Tiger. But that was 10 years ago. And let's be honest, why is David Lingmerth even in this field? I haven't looked it up, but it's definitely a surprise that he is. And he's making the most of his opportunity. He was 4-under through 8, is right there in the thick of things, despite kind of hitting his tee shot on number 18 into the water. Oh, Mark, come on. Yeah. You come and go. Like, I'm riffing about David Lingmerth, the things you're making me do. No man should ever do this on a Saturday night.
I've got you on Lingmerth, brother. That was a beautiful vamping job by you. David Lingmerth, I don't know if you've mentioned this, but you mustn't forget that a few years ago, he battled Tiger head-to-head down the stretch here at this Players' Championship. And, you know, I watched him play golf in college at West Florida before we went to Arkansas. And he was always a sort of diminutive, gutty sort. And I didn't really expect him to make the late mistake that he did, because that tee shot on 18 was disastrous. Because ordinarily, he's a very reliable striker who hits the ball from left to right. So hit that nose-diving hook in the water on 18, that sort of speaks to the pressure of it all. Because he's been playing solid this season, has a new instructor in Mark McCann, and they've been making inroads on the stuff. But that's just, you know, that tee shot down 18, the one he hit, that's evidence of the pressure of this event and just the very nature of the golf course, because it keeps you so uncomfortable over every shot. I mean, there's never really a shot that you can almost take a breath on. The first time you breathe is when you get into the clubhouse after the round.
Yeah, Mark, I do have a question about Lingmuth. What do you make of his putting?
You know what's funny about that? 2 weeks ago, Patrick, at the Honda Classic, I'm on the range just doing some reconnaissance work, and I walk past Camilo Villegas, who's like one of the friendliest humans in the world, and he's hitting balls, and he's telling me about his swing changes and stuff. And then we walk over to the putting green, and he's using a putter the same style. And I'm like, really? And he goes, man, I was playing golf with my brother, Manny Villegas, who's actually caddying right now. And Manny goes, this is unreal. You cannot putt badly with this thing. And so I tried it, Camilo, that is, and he started putting well. So he used it. And so it's the kind of thing now where, you know, the PGA Tour is not a copycat league, but everyone's looking over each other's shoulders. And I wouldn't be surprised, because the way it's held on the top, it's kind of like a fulcrum, just not anchored. And then you're basically just making a pendulum back and forth with your bottom hand. And a few folks have been seeing experiments. So Lingmuth, I don't know if you followed the Camilo or vice versa, but I'm seeing its incidence a little bit more. And if I know the PGA Tour, maybe this trend might continue, and you might see one or two guys who's struggling on the greens try it as well.
I know Spencer Levine has implemented it as well. I believe he successfully Monday qualified for a tournament using that. And he might be the guy who actually gave it to Lingmuth.
Spencer in college used to use a broom handle putter. And a lot of guys will go to this sort of thing, you know, folks that have been like arm lock guys or broom handle putters and such. But it is gaining some traction. And the way the putter is weighted, it's almost counterbalanced in a way. So it's very heavy. So in a way, it kind of swings itself. There's merit to it. I wouldn't be surprised if you don't see one or two more folks who are missing putts give it a try.
Yeah, I'm sure there's a lot of players who would like to make more putts out there. But some that don't are those inside the top five. We will get to those in a second. But first, a word from our sponsor.
Rise and shine, football fans. This is Susanna Fuller from Morning Footy, a podcast part of the CBS Sports Galazzo Network covering the breadth of the global game. Join me, Nico Cantor, Charlie Davies, Alexis Guerreros, and guests every morning for the perfect blend of news, analysis, conversation, and exclusive interviews. If you love soccer, then look no further. We've got you covered for Europe's top five leagues, the W Gold Cup, the Champions League knockout stage, CONCACAF Nations League, NWSL, MLS, transfer news, and much more. Download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and anywhere podcasts are found. Subscribe to Morning Footy.
This is Tony Kornheiser's show. I'm Tony. You expected someone else? So what exactly is the show about? I don't know. It's a sports show nominally. Football's over, but we're finally at a point where things matter in college basketball, and baseball season is on deck. Greatest three words in the English language, pitchers and catchers. We have some of the best voices come on and explain what matters or what makes an upset, like Ryan does, 9-8. No, that's not an upset. No, yeah, it is, Bob. And if you're lucky, I might just tell you about my search for discounted sleep pants or my worries about what my dog just ate. Listen on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we are back, and let's start with Jesus himself, Tommy Fleetwood, the flow god. a fantastic round of 7-under 65 out there today. Was kind of hovering 3-under through his opening nine and caught fire from 11 through 15 with 4 birdies in a 5-hole stretch. Was unable to take advantage of 16, had a good look up there on 18. So, you know, might be his dinner might not taste all that great. Feels like he could maybe left one or two shots out there, but right there in the thick of things. And some way, this guy is without a PGA Tour victory. He's just too good of a player for that to be true. What are your thoughts on Tommy's day out there, Mark?
Well, when I see him walk on the water across to 17 green, then I'll believe your name for him. He is a curious case because of how well he hits it. But he's always the kind of guy that sort of seems like when one thing's working, the other thing isn't. And when he's striking it great, then he isn't putting well. And when he's putting better, then the driver goes haywire on him. So it's kind of odd that way. But this golf course has always suited Tommy. His record around here, if memory serves me, has been quite solid. And looking at that scorecard, throughout the week, the back nine has played easier on average than the front. And that little elbow of the golf course there, 10, 11, 12, folks were having their way with it over there. And so everyone was making their share of their score around that place. And you're right, there was a misstep maybe with the ill conversion or lack thereof for birdie on 16. But he's right in the thick of things right now. And with the way this leaderboard is looking, you know, with a big day tomorrow, he may not win, but he certainly can finish well up there. And for someone who's down the FedEx Cup points list, remember 70 getting the playoffs? And I know that's a long way away, but it comes quickly. So when you can amass points quickly and early, that's helpful to the cause.
Yeah, only 5 strokes back behind Scottie Scheffler, and they mentioned it a few times on the broadcast. Biggest deficit overcame was 5 strokes by Justin Leonard when he won his Players' Championship, so he's still in that, you know? No new history needs to be made. They also mentioned that he is working with Butch Harmon. Did you know about that, Mark, at all?
I did. Butch, the golf swing whisperer. He's not even the golf swing whisperer because he doesn't really change their swings. You know, Butch has a wonderful way of telling you what you kind of need to hear. And then when you're searching, oftentimes these guys are searching for stuff, but what they're searching for is in plain sight in front of them. And sometimes they think they need to do something better, but they don't really. And Butch comes with the gravitas, I guess it is, of having worked with world number ones like Greg Norman and Tiger Woods and Phil Mickelson. Actually, Phil was never number one. So he's worked with basically all of them. So Butch knows the comings and the goings. So if Butch says to Tommy Fleetwood, settle down, Petal, your swing's not so bad, you might just want to think about this if you don't want it to turn to the left, which is Tommy's problem, then Tommy might not complicate stuff as much. Because golf is a cerebral game, but it's played best when you've got an absence of thought. And sometimes these golfers, in an effort to get better, I think micromanage stuff. Everyone does, to a man. And Butch has a wonderful way of whispering into your ear that, you know, you're okay. You just keep doing what you're doing, and then he'll tell you a joke or some story about some old timer, and you'll find it hilarious. And the next thing, while you're hitting, you're flushing and you're not even realizing what you're doing, and then you go out and compete. So he's a genius that way. He's still the greatest instructor in the game. And I texted him the other day because I found out about this. I'm like, Butch, I thought you were retired. I'm like, before long, you're going to be teaching everyone on the tour again. And I got back the not on your life kind of thing. So, but I'm still waiting to see this, because with Ricky's success and now Tommy playing well, you know, I feel like Butch's phone's going to start ringing again.
Yeah, don't be afraid to, you know, give me his number, because my game's kind of fallen off a cliff here recently. Gone from a 2 to a 5. It's not good in the McDonald household, Mark. But alongside Tommy Fleetwood, we got Aaron Rye, who had an electric finish. 4-1-3, first person in Players' history to finish in that. He catapulted himself to 9-under. He just moved to the Pontevedra area a couple weeks ago. Another Scottish Open winner, just like Minwoo Lee, which we'll get to. Your boy Bez still in the mix, you know, holding steady. Nice solid round of 3-under out there, 9-under, only 5 strokes back. And Chad Ramey as well, you know, after that quadruple bogey there on 17 in a second round, kind of felt like he would be one of those guys who's the first round leader and then falters all the way down on the leaderboard. But he's been there steady and holding strong.
Well, kudos to Ramey. I mean, golly, that 9-iron he hit in the water on 17 on Friday, that was actually a really good shot. That was a rookie mistake that he made there to me, because of all the hole locations on the 17th, the back hole location on that plateau is the hardest. It's the hardest to get to because the way that green sits and the way it gets exposed to sun and wind, that area always dries out. And when you stand back on the tee, you see that shelf where they had the hole today. You see the backstop behind it because it's kind of green and it's raised. So the green from the tee looks green. It looks receptive. Then that back plateau is like a tarmac at times. And he had a decent shot straight through the wind, one bounce over the back. He will learn from that, because the next time the hole's back there and he's back there, I don't think he's going with the off-speed 9-iron, I guarantee you. He's going with something that's barely, if it gets on the back tier, it's bouncing up there. And look, if it was 4 or 5 feet shorter, he may still be in the lead. Who knows? But kudos to him for battling back like he did. That was manful. It truly was.
Yeah, someone who did not make a rookie mistake was Aaron Rye today. Made the second hole-in-one of the week, which is the first time in Players' history that 2 hole-in-ones have been made on the 17 in the same week. Josh, if you want to cue up that video.
This was just a moment ago. Playing behind Fleetwood. High shot. And then right at it. This is coming back. It's going to take a look. Yes! Aaron Rye
Incredible. And this was a guy who mentioned after to Damon Hack, who's been doing a great job with the interviews for NBC, that he was really proud of the way he kind of composed himself after that moment and was able to strike two terrific golf shots into 18 and pay it off with another birdie. And this is a player who really hasn't had great form this year. He was decent in the fall with a couple top 20s there in Vegas, T7 in Houston Open, but nothing better than a T40 in 2023, but it seems like his ball striking came to play. And Aaron Rye, as we know, can be a tremendous ball striker.
Yeah, he really can. I love his story. You know, hard worker, wasn't some blue chip growing up there in the UK in terms of, you know, just talent as a young man. And he hooked up with two guys. They've give internet golf lessons, me and my golf. And they're great instructors, and they sponsored him for a while. Now he's on the biggest stage in the world and making aces on arguably the most recognized par three in the world. And it's great to see because he's such a good guy and he's a nice golfer. He's solid. He's solid all around. You know, looking at that playback there, I just felt more for Brad Faxon than anything else because, you know, trying to make a recorded hole in one sound like it was authentic was just a really hard job as an announcer. So I felt for him there, but the shot was incredible. And you always seem to find some craziness with those two forward hole locations.
So he'll start at 9 under the final round, one stroke behind Cam Davis, who has been going through it this year. He mentioned to the media earlier that he had some health issues earlier in the year. He's finally getting over them this week. It feels like he's finally back to 100%, and his play is showing it. Coming in this week, he missed his last five cuts. His only made cut this year came at the Sony Open, a T32 there. Has never made the cut at this tournament as well. So it is kind of coming out of the blue, but this is a guy who was on Trevor's team for the international team, is loaded with talent, you know, kind of the modern golfer, hits it out there a mile, really long, really athletic, has a great left-handed swing too. And it seems to kind of come into fruition this week for him.
Yeah, that lefty swing will help when he hits it against a bulkhead or something. Here's the truth, honest, I will admit this. Of all the players contending this week at the Players, Cam Davis is the one I would least expect to do so. He hits it high and he hits it long and the wind blows around this place and there are crosswinds on every hole. And he likes to go with driver. It's kind of his calling card. And when he misses wide right with that thing. But it's amazing to me when you find a little groove and all of a sudden the hole starts looking big. And so good for Cam Davis. I mean, he's a wildly talented kid. Winning the Australian Open as a teenager speaks to how good he is. But again, look, anything's possible with these guys. But if you were putting a gun to my head and saying, do you think Cam Davis plays well this week? I'd probably say no. But that being said, I've made wrong decisions in my life before. So I hope this continues because he's a really cool kid. He's a wild talent. And he's the kind of guy when he gets going, he's not afraid. He doesn't back down. That we know for sure.
Yep. And another guy like that is his fellow countryman, Minwoo Lee, who began his day in unbelievable fashion, hole out from the fairway on number one for eagle to, you know, push himself right up there towards the top of the leaderboard. He was hanging around Scheffler's rear view. He was 4 under through his first six holes, grabbed the lead at 11 with a birdie after hitting it left into the bunker, laid up, made birdie the old conventional way for him, added another and was 13 under, one ahead of Scheffler. And this is a guy, if you're not paying too close attention to the world of golf, who's kind of just been eating it up on the DP World Tour. He's been playing some great golf out there, 8 top 13 finishes in his last 10 worldwide starts, finished runner-up at Abu Dhabi. He took down Matt Fitzpatrick and Thomas Dietrich at the Scottish Open in 2021 in a playoff. And you'll hear it a lot, you know, his sister Minji, top five player in the world, U.S. Open champion. He might not even be the best Lee in the household, all this, but I was wildly impressed with his play. He had a bit of swagger to him with the shades, the long hair, the stash, the swing speed. So what was your takeaway from Minwoo's round today?
I'm going to tell him the stash is going to go. the mustache doesn't work. But what works, I mean, this boy flushes. Minwoo hits it. And he's powerful. I don't think people realize how long he can hit it. And he's got a whole lot of self-belief about him. But, you know, when you're playing with Minji as an older sister and she's winning everything, I think you're kind of okay with chasing people down. And you're up for a battle all of the time. And all of those victories he's had, Like that Scottish Open, he birdied the last, if memory serves me, and the weather was horrid. I mean, it was blustery and cold, and he smashed the 7-iron in there to a few feet and made the closing birdie to win. And it was one of those, he hit the thing, and he started walking instantaneously. Now I want you to imagine, remember Harding Park, President's Cup, Tiger Woods, like 4-iron from the rough, final hole, hit that 4-iron, and he gave it that fancy club twirl, right? And he started walking, stiffed it, and they made eagle to win the match. It was that sort of thing. And that's who Minwoo is. And he's not afraid of anybody. He can really go. And I think the closing bogey today that stings, but he's the kind of guy, he's going to be like, oh, no stress, mate. He goes, we go and get him tomorrow. He's that sort of a guy. And so I would not be surprised whatsoever if he hangs around and really pushes on Scottie Scheffler.
Yeah, I think he'll do a good job keeping pace with him. But Scheffler's a tough cookie to crack. We have seen kind of some cracks in his armor over this past year. You think about the Charles Schwab Challenge. You think about the Tour Championship as well with 54 hole leads. And Minwoo will have a chance, you would think, down the stretch if he plays in, you know, a similar fashion tomorrow. But the way Scottie Scheffler played today and is playing this week is out of this world. He's about 2 strokes better from tee to green than the guy in second, Gary Woodland, per round, which is just out of this world. And it really kind of came to life early in his round. He hit his approach on one to tap in distance, chipped in for eagle on two to take the lead, and, you know, instantly became the odds on favorite. He added another birdie there and then hit it out in the water on seven. And it was a pretty big moment in his round, I think. It felt like a double bogey could have happened, but he nearly saved par, hit his third shot to 15 feet, almost jarred it, and then goes birdie at eight, which is not an easy hole, birdie at nine, and then kind of cruised along to that, you know, during the middle part of his back nine where he could have maybe added a birdie on 11, had a really nice up and down there on 10, 12, the drivable par four he didn't take advantage of, but like you said, kept his cool, level-headed, nothing's going to bother this guy. And then boom, birdie on 16 and a closing birdie on 18. And you look up and all of a sudden, Scottie Scheffler's got a 2-stroke lead with 18 holes to play.
Yeah. If I'm not allowed to bet, but if I was a betting man, with the fact that the golf course is remaining softish, I'm expecting the rules staff are going to have those sub-air systems cranking tonight. And they're going to do everything to suck the moisture out of this golf course, especially the greens. But with the golf course, the fairways were really soft today with all, because they took a half an inch or so of rain last night. I mean, the heavens opened for a few hours. With the golf course playing soft, I feel like it makes a real disaster for Scottie Scheffler less likely. Because when fairways are soft, they play wider. When greens are soft, they play wider. And the way he's striking the golf ball, I don't see him hitting some sort of sights here that's going to cause a big number. So in other words, if he's going to make a mistake, it's likely going to be a bogey or two. And with him with a 2-stroke lead, I think he shot like 68 and 69, right? And 65 today. I think I might be wrong. But that 68 he shot in round one when we had every shot, it looked like that was the most he could have shot. So let's just go with that and say, okay, the golf course is playing easier. If Scotty gets out there and shoots 69 tomorrow, that means Minwoo has to shoot 67 or better, or 67 to tie him, better to beat him. And that is a big ask when you're playing in the final group at the Players' Championship. So right now, I think the softer conditions, if they remain soft, play right into his favor. What might be a negative is apparently the wind is a bit more gusty tomorrow. It's from a different direction. And gusty breezes for these guys are kind of hard. You know, I was talking about the predictability or the ability to predict. You know, when you're standing there in the fairway and you're like playing 175 into a consistent right to left breeze, you can make the call, right? But if it's in and out and you might hit and the wind dies and you're over the back of the green in the water, well, that you cannot predict. If it is gusty tomorrow, that may be an equalizer too. But the one thing about this guy, this is my final point, is he is now a big game hunter and he knows how to win big tournaments. And he survived the Masters, his first win. And he did so scrambling. He showed he could scramble and win. So if the golf swing does let him down some, we know he can scramble. He's fantastic. His hands are gold around the green. So I think it's going to take something unlikely for him to be unseated tomorrow. I really do.
Yeah. So if he goes on to win, he will join two other men to hold the Players Championship and the Masters at the same time. Mark, can you name them?
Tiger Woods, probably.
Yeah, he is one of them.
Rory hasn't won the Masters. Sandy Lyle.
Who's the guy who has more majors than Tiger?
Jack Nicklaus. Goodness. Well, how could I thought I was being smart with my Sandy Lyle guess, because Sandy Lyle has won both of these. I guess not at the same time.
It was a layup. It was an absolute layup. You kind of missed it.
I bogeyed.
Ball out. Yeah. You play golf. Yeah. All right. We will get into the betting favorites here. Josh, if you could put up the live odds, that would be great. Ooh, I didn't see these before coming on. All right, we got Scottie Scheffler for those of you listening. -250, Minwoo Lee 6-1. And then it drops off pretty drastically with Cam Davis 25-1, Tommy Fleetwood at the same number, Sungjae at 40, Bez at 45, and Aaron and Rye at 45. Mark, I know you said you weren't a betting man, but if you had to pick one name to win the 2023 Players Championship, who are you going with?
Well, the smart money says Scottie Scheffler, right? But if I was to lay a sneaky $100, I'd put it on Minwoo Lee. He's got guts. He's got the stuff you need inside, and he can hit it. And he like really doesn't give a glorious stuff what anyone think. You know, he just goes out there and plays, and he's so comfortable with who he is. And I think he's the one guy that could sort of be cool with the hysteria that is playing the Players' Championship on a Sunday, and with the Players' Championship trophy and that massive paycheck and all that stuff on the end of it. And if there's one guy that wasn't going to be affected, it's him. Scheffler's the same way. But I think a sneaky 100 on Minwoo Lee wouldn't be a bad idea.
A sneaky 100? Oh, man, I need your job. Okay. I think Scheffler eventually will get it done. I agree with you. He's tee to green. He's way too steady. He's tee to greening this mm-hmm. place to death. It's at his will. It seems like his mistake will only be a bogey here or there. Nothing in the blow-up capacity, so I think it's kind of just inevitable, and I've mentioned it before. He kind of just hovers, and then pounces. He's like a hyena or a lion or something, and just has his prey in his mouth just like that. So I think Scottie Scheffler will eventually be your 2023 Players Championship winner. Mark, I know you are big on the one and done. Do we know if anyone had him this week?
Yeah, two folks have got him, I think.
Oh, really? Mm-hmm. Oh, no, that's no good.
And just for the record, hyenas, they don't hunt their prey. They eat carrion. They eat like leftover prey and stuff. Now, a lion can sneak and pounce. Hyenas don't sneak and pounce. So let's find a different comparative next time.
They don't hunt in packs and like circle their prey.
No, those are hyenas. Those are wild dogs. Hyenas kind of they sneak around and skulk around and find leftover stuff.
Common mistake. Common mistake.
We both won over par, bro.
I grew up outside Washington, D.C., okay? Yeah. I've never seen a hyena in my life. I was taking a stab in the dark. Okay, so we got Kyle M. and Sia. All right, two of the bottom place guys. If we had to pick two guys to have Scottie Scheffler this week, I'm glad it's them, too.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, looking down that list, I'm surprised. I thought Hovland would accelerate some today. My guy Cantlay is lurking. I mean, he's in a tie for 14th or whatever right now. Xander was also surprised at. So it remains to be seen what happens tomorrow.
Yeah. One thing for sure, the fans will not be getting any money this week with the John Rahm WD.
I'm sure they are. I can only imagine what's happening in the comments right now. We love you, fans. We really do.
Things you just truly hate to see. Before we get out of here, Mark, you got anything else? Before we wrap up.
Yeah. Thankfully, this will be my last time in this hotel for the year. So my internet on the next trips will be better. So I look forward to catching up with you then, but look, it's a great event. It truly is. It's every time I come back, I enjoy it more. And every time I come back, each time I see this golf course, I appreciate it more. And I hope, I would like to think that it gets the respect it deserves, because the players have high respect for this place and this championship. And I'm sure tomorrow will be fun, as it always is.
I could not agree more. And that'll do it for your round three recap for the Players Championship. You can find Mark at Mark_Immelman on Twitter. You can find him on your TV at PGA Tour Live. You can find him at his podcast on the Mark. You can find him anywhere. Just Google his name. He's Mark Immelman. And you can find me, Patrick McDonald, at Amateur Status on Twitter. This was the First Cut Podcast. Thanks.
Survivor 46 is here, and so is On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast, and we have a twist this season. The winner of Survivor 45, Dee Valladares, will be joining us every week.
We're going behind the scenes of the biggest moments, the how and the why things happen, and the strategy and analysis you can only get from someone like me, a Survivor winner.
Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.